Okay, let's go home. Ehi, tonga riboshi no tari e potfik. Written by Lily Pilibito and read by Alani. Summary. Ulrugio leaves the atelier after finding out about Kiefer's betrayal, and Agat is the one to bring him home. Chapter 1. Ollie. The snow on the slopes north of Galdry was the mean kind. Not the fluffy, friendly clumps that blanketed the atelier in winter and made for good snowmen and slipped off the roof during the night with muted, gentle whumps. This mountain stuff was sharp and powdery, so blindingly white against the sun that it made travel hard during midday. It blew where it pleased, wiping out tracks and pricked at the skin. It built up around the pines and created hidden tree wells where wayward travelers would stumble and fall, never to be heard from again. There was no mistake about it either. The meanness was the appeal. Ulrugio had felt the need to put himself somewhere cruel for a time. And so he'd fallen back. Not to Galdry proper, where people would ask questions and start gossip, but to the mountains behind it, where the tiny settlement scraped out tenuous livings in the passes, and where only a few witches would ever deign to visit. It was an unpopular, uncomfortable place to travel, and that was the point. Alone in the mountains, he could do his work in peace, completing as many acts of service as he pleased, no longer limited to just the three per season. No need to report back as a watchful eye, or complete commissions for fussy clients, no brain caps to chase, no formal obligations except those of the people in the area. It meant no girls either, which was something he wouldn't dwell on for long. The more he thought about their pack of mismatched apprentices, the more he doubted himself, and to protect his heart from further hairline cracks, he threw himself into work and soothed himself with the fact that they were warm and attended to, and he wasn't really their master anyway. Their master was Kiefri, and Kiefri, he couldn't think about at all. In a week, it would be a year now, which would have been an impossible thing to consider before he found out. But he had found out about Kifri's betrayal, purely by accident, and by the sound of it, not for the first time. And in the immediate wash of grief and rage, he'd stormed back to his side of the atelier, gathered a few items, too few in hindsight, and flew off as fast as his shoes would let him. And when that wasn't fast enough, he'd set himself down on the nearest hillside, scrubbed out the marks, and withdrew them to be faster, eye-wateringly fast. Away with all possible haste. Now, after a full winter of that very same away, he looked the part of a man who'd rejected all the comforts of the great hall, the cozy atelier, and indeed, polite with society. His beard has grown in thick and dark, and with no reliable way to cut it, his hair had become long enough that he had to sweep it back and tie it away from his face. The picture of a rugged northerner, if ever there was one, and exactly the look he tried to avoid all his life. His cloak, too, was starting to become more frayed than he'd like, The cold is dull and pressy now, and the sun had bleached his traveling pack of faded, ill-looking green. Of course, he knew about witches who devoted their lives to helping those without magic, who traveled non-stop, working as they went. He just hadn't figured he'd ever become one. He'd never been one to look after himself more than he needed to, and maybe this was just a more extreme version of that trait. Neglect for the greater good, perhaps. These things had to be done, though, and he had to be the one to do them. Ulrugio was back from the main mountain pass today, fixing the light on a stone marker that had been knocked over in the latest spring storm. Blizzards had been more frequent than he'd like over the winter, and for the last 6 months, he'd been improving the main trail that wound its way from village to village. There were a handful of small shelters along the pass now, their interiors lit with glowing rocks once night fell. There were snack stones tucked away in the shelters too, to pop inside thick mittens and keep inside sleeping furs. From time to time, villagers would come by to offer him food or blankets as a gesture of thanks. And to these people, he was only ever as kind as he could be, but he did his best to keep his distance emotionally. When he heard the muffled sound of steps behind him, he assumed this was again the case.
"Be just a second,"
he said, as he settled the pose back in place and gave it a final hearty thump. "Master Ollie!" The familiar voice was enough to make him look up sharply, and as he did, he nearly wrenched his neck. Agat. On his mountains, guidance orb in hand, standing in a tea gray cloak, wearing the familiar seafoam green hat, golden tassel ruffling in the cold breeze. "Oh," he said, and the word clouded into ice vapor even as it left his mouth. He tried again, with even less success. "Oh." A year had passed, and she was a little taller than he remembered, her hair a little longer. It had curled around her ears before, unruly and undisciplined, the complete opposite of her approach to life. But now it brushed against her neck and touched the tops of her shoulders. The fiercely determined look on her face, however, was exactly the same as it'd always been. He could only cross the path between them and sweep her into a tight, protective hug. And to his surprise, she matched his intensity, wrapping both arms around his shoulders and gripping his cloak firmly.
"It's so dangerous here. Are the other girls with you?"
"No," she said, pulling back just enough to speak. He allowed himself a moment more, enjoying the brief window where he didn't have to answer for anything and could only hold her slim frame. Finally, though, he pulled back.
"Is he with you?"
She was a smart girl. She understood immediately. "He isn't." His shoulders slumped in relief and he released her fully. "But he has been looking for you. At night, when he thinks we're sleeping."
Damn it, Kifri. Forever searching, never settled. It was no way to live a life.
He watches her eyes darted across the planes of his face, a little alarmed.
That was right. He must look very different. Not only was the fuller beard a change, but he was certain he still had the less of a long, shallow cut along his temple, where he'd been unceremoniously backhanded by a branch from a fir tree the week before. It had not been his most dignified moment, and he hadn't thought it truly possible, but he'd seen stars as he sat there in the snow, tiny sparks firing at the corners of his vision. In an effort not to upset her, he gave her more space, stepping away and hesitantly taking a seat on the boulder behind him, as if to signal that he wasn't going anywhere, and that they were free to talk. And talk she did, losing no time by jumping straight in.
"He said he'd hurt you, and because of that, you'd left, that it was his fault and not you did."
He nodded, reluctant. "That's true."
And if that meant Kifri had spent the last year wrestling with the ire of four teenagers who believed him at fault, then it would be soundly deserved. Funny, too, if not for the fact that he didn't wish the girls to be in a perpetual state of resentment.
"But that doesn't explain why you didn't write."
Agat was mad now, and there it was in person,
That very same teenage anger. Her eyes were narrowed as she balled her fists in her mitts, all righteous, youthful fury. The best, the purest kind.
So what? So he hurt you? I didn't. Coco didn't. Why didn't you say goodbye to any of us before you left? Why didn't you send us a letter when you felt better? Why didn't you come back?
Because I never felt better. Ollie crossed his legs on the flat of the boulder and set his chin in his hand, thinking about this, giving the question the weight he deserved. It was a short while before he answered. I'm sincerely sorry. All four of you deserve better. He took a breath and continued. When I left, I was only thinking about him, I'm sorry to say. Sinokia once told me that sometimes to stop a wound from bleeding, they'll burn it shut. And I don't want to be dramatic or anything, but I thought, if maybe I didn't think about any of you and just got to work, I could cauterize the whole thing, burn it all closed. Hagrid looked crushed.
You didn't want to think about us.
Brutal. It's more like, I couldn't. That if I did, nothing good would come from it. That I'd want to come home immediately. And it was too soon for that. She seemed to accept this after a moment and climbed onto the boulder beside him.
It's hard to see a fight, she said to the folds on her lap, the anger ebbing away. It feels wrong to see you like this.
Ollie laughed, a little rueful at the edges, but there was a genuine sound to it too. I agree.
What did he do to hurt you?
How to answer this one? Did he smooth it over, or redirect her away from the truth of the thing? Or just tell her straight out and let her make up her own mind about it? The answer seemed obvious. She was old enough for the truth. Avoiding it is what put him in this situation in the first place. Kifri erased part of my memory. I confronted him about something important, and he made me forget the events leading up to it. Says it was his way of protecting me. I wish I could answer you with more detail, but obviously that part of me is gone forever. It was important enough to him that he broke our friendship over it, so do with that what you will, I suppose.
No, Agot stared. He wouldn't.
Then her anger was back, as bright as before. She seemed ready to launch into a volley of fresh indignation directed at her professor. But he set his hand on her arm to stop her in her tracks. He couldn't have people being furious on his behalf, especially not the girls. That wasn't how this was going to work. Don't hate him, okay? Monstrous people have done monstrous things to him. You can be mad at him. Because mad, we can work with. She paused.
Don't hate him?
Course not. Love him, he said aloud, jarring him on himself.
Why?
This conversation was getting too heavy, but Agat was nothing if not tenacious. He sighed. Have you ever done anything that truly hurt someone? She seemed to think on this for a time, then glanced at the nearby pines.
Yes.
Do they hate you for it?
No. She answered.
He resettled his cloak around him, as if that closed the matter.
Have?
Agat's voice was pitched low, as if someone might overhear, though there was no danger of that.
Have you ever hurt someone?
Absolutely, he said, without missing a beat.
Do they hate you?
He scratched the underside of his chin, fingers scraping through the bristles. They died, so I never found out. Maybe yes.
What happened?
Agat was really pushing her luck now, and there was only so far his vulnerability extended.
What did you do?
Look, I'll tell you later. Besides, I hurt all four of you girls when I didn't write. That's an example that's nice and fresh. He could tell she wanted to pick at a thread and find out what he meant by his earlier comment, but he was grateful when she took the hint and changed tactics.
Will you come home?
Well, He knew this had been coming from the moment her boots hit the snow behind him.
I'll at least take you back there, don't I? Light's getting low, and if you think I'm sending you home on your own like this, you've got another thing coming.
Her eyes went wide, and she leaned towards him. Right now? He sighed, deep and long, and mostly for show. Though the idea of seeing Kifri again sent a spike of cold anxiety through him.
Fine, sure, if you want. This was a stupid move, though. You know that, right? You have to promise you won't just walk into the wilderness again anytime soon. You and Coco are cut from the same cloth when it comes to this kind of thing.
There wasn't a lick of remorse on her face.
I feel like the results were worth it.
Agat, just say the words, please. Stick to the script.
She tucked a stray curl behind her ear, but behind her hand, he could see the pleased look on her face.
I promise I won't go alone into the mountains to bring you home again.
Good.
He slapped his hands to his knees and stood.
Like pulling teeth with this crowd.
She too scrambled to her feet and shook out her cloak, readying herself for travel.
Then let's go.
And it was a command, not a request. Even with the help of window waves to get home, the journey still took hours. The darkened mountain pass was some distance from Galdry, where he had Agat send a letter to the atelier.
Safe,
it read.
Found him, coming home now. Don't wait up.
From there, the portal to the Great Hall, where he earned himself a fair few looks on his weathered appearance. He considered taking a bath and grabbing something to eat, but it was late enough that options were limited. He'd really rather get her home in one piece. From the main portal hall, they changed to Calm, and from there, it was only a short flight across the low hills to the familiar shapes of their atelier, light glowing in at least a few of the windows. Apparently the "don't wait up" bit of the ladder had been ignored. They lit on the ground a short distance away, and Agat ran forward a few steps in the cold grass. When she realized her feet were the only ones moving, she turned and fixed him with a concerned look.
Aren't you coming in?
I will. Just give me a minute, okay?
She nodded, looking reluctant to go farther.
I won't leave, I promise. I wouldn't do that to you.
And that seemed to do the trick. She closed the distance to the front door and ducked inside, no doubt to alert the others. Immediately he began to pace. In truth, he wasn't ready for this. If you told him that morning he'd be back on this hill at nightfall, he'd have laughed in disbelief. He could do nothing to dispel the nervous energy, though, and his bag was still heavy, despite shrinking spells on the items inside, so instead he sank to the ground and crossed his arms across his knees. Olrugio stayed that way for longer than he would have liked, but every time he moved to stand, a quiet watch asked for just another minute. Ultimately, the decision was made for him. The swish of fabric on grass and quiet footfalls caught his attention, and when he turned, Kifri was walking towards him.
Here we go, I guess.
The fifth stopped a short distance away.
Thank you for bringing her home.
Kifri opened with, and Olurugio appreciated the unvarnished practicality of the words. There was a neutrality there that he could work with, a shared understanding that the girls always came first.
How far did you have to go?
Oli scratched absently at the side of his beard, hesitating.
Mountains northwest of Godrey,
he finally admitted.
Past the lake villages.
It was far too remote a place for a 13, almost 14-year-old girl to be traveling alone. It was far too remote a place for even him, and confessing it'd been where he'd retreated to was a little more telling than he'd like.
You hurt me so badly that I went as far away as the world would permit, a place where licking your wounds meant you'd freeze to death.
Only chance to look over his shoulder, and Kifri, whose carefully schooled features had remained neutral, expressed a look of genuine shock that was visible even in the low light.
Agat,
he muttered under his breath, the name both a curse and an admission of awe.
We talk about it,
said Olorubio.
She's not doing that again. I made her promise.
He lifted a hand as if waving off the idea on her behalf. Kifri nodded, seemingly not touching the implications of again, and before any lull could fall between them, Olorubio heard him segue into a gentle invitation. Please, at least have some tea. This is how it would go, wouldn't it? First, he would have some tea. Perhaps a snack after, no strings attached. And then it would be so late that traveling would be ill-advised. So why didn't he sleep over for the night? Maybe in the morning the girls would be awake. And then how could he leave again, once they'd all welcomed him back and coaxed him into staying for breakfast? If he stepped into those rooms, he was doomed to never step out of them again. And maybe both of them knew it. Or one of them knew it, and the other hoped it to be true.
What kind of tea?
He was hedgy now, brows pushed together, as if trying to keep an escape route open. The cozy welcome was a dangerous snare, the strangling kind that trappers in the mountains used, and he was a hair's breadth from gladly sticking his head right into it. The kind with whiskey, if you like, but otherwise, all of the usual kinds. Which sounded positively healing after so long with scarcely a drop of wine.
Fine, fine.
He shouldered his bag, rose from the ground, and started in the direction of the kitchen door. Kifri fell into step just behind him, careful in his silence.
Who they sent to replace me?
Ollie turned around but kept walking, his backward steps bringing him closer to the building. Lulusi, Kifri answered. We made a room for her at the back, by the kitchen, but she's been away for a few days on leave. I think that's why Agat saw her opportunity. She knew I couldn't live with only one of us here.
Smart kid. Lulusi, of the Knights.
Olorubio squinted sharply. The same, though it's formerly of the Knights now. Interesting. Olly had certainly been lax in his approach to his watchful eye duties, often by his own design, trusting Kifri to carry on as he pleased and only interjecting when something egregious reared its head. For good or ill, Lulusi would hold him to a different standard. And for that, Olorubio could only be curious and maybe a little grateful, even if she had been part of a deeply destructive organization. He supposed there had been quite a lot of mayhem in the ranks recently.
Girls like her, all right.
They prefer you. Not so subtle flattery. Olorubio nearly called him out on it, but regardless, it was likely true. Still, having a young woman's presence around for the girls seemed all right. There were some questions that Ingles had that neither he nor Kifri had ready answers to. Ollie made a thoughtful sound and took the last few steps to the door before standing aside and letting Kifri do the honors. The simple gesture of waiting, that of a guest and not a resident, didn't seem to go unnoticed. Kifri looked him up and down, and he couldn't help but do the same in return. Kifri hadn't said anything about his appearance, but certainly he must have been thinking it. If Agat had been visibly thrown for a loop, Kifri must have thoughts indeed on the matter, having seen so many versions of Olorubio over the years. But whatever they were, he was keeping them firmly unsaid. Kifri, however, looked the same as he had on the day Olorubio had left, still regal in his own way, still holding himself with a deliberate sense of calm, still just as pretty as ever.
Easy with that, he warned himself.
Kifri opened the door.
I'm
Chapter 2. Kifri. Every now and then, Kifri would allow himself a little time to come apart at the seams. When the girls were studying in the late afternoon, or in the evenings before bed, he would cross the bridge to the workshop at the far end and close the door behind him. Then, away from curious eyes, he would sink onto the glowstones and lean forward to set his forehead on their cool surface, and there he would stay, breathing deeply, unraveling quietly to himself with nothing but the occasional sound of rainfall for company. Aluruga's rooms were as cluttered as they'd ever been, as if ready and waiting for his return. From what Kifri could tell, nearly everything except for traveling essentials had been abandoned after their conversation. A half-finished commission was still on his work table, the idea promising even in its early stages. His tools, full bottles of wine, the blankets on the unmade bed, all of it lay untouched. The girls, too, had been surrendered, and Kifri knew that was the loss that had to hurt the most. His mind leapt to the image of an animal in a trap, who gnaws off its own food, leaving behind something precious in an effort to free itself. The act of removing Lurugio's memories had seemed like a necessary precaution to keep the man out of harm's way, but Kifri couldn't deny that a large part of his motivation had always been wholly selfish. If Aldi didn't know, then he wouldn't feel the duty to bring in outside help, or worry more than necessary. He could sleep soundly, as much as the man was capable of, assuming everything was more or less fine, leaving Kifri free to complete his investigations with no questions asked. If Ollie didn't know, everything could stay as it was for just a little longer. Peaceful, pastoral, simple. Olerugio wouldn't complicate things for him, was what it came down to, and Kifri despised the cold practicality of that, but it was much too late to put the ink back in that bottle. At times, Kifri's heartache took a more active form. He would wait until the atelier had gone to bed, then pass through every window way he had coordinates to, hoping to find some clue, some trail that hadn't gone cold. The guidance orb was helpful for pointing the way, but it could only offer him a direction, not a distance or a precise location. And at times he'd started out in earnest, he soon realized time was not on his side, and was forced to turn back before sunrise. He had some success triangulating Olurugio's location with portals to the northern towns, but quickly ran into a problem that he couldn't easily overcome. During the day, the white of the snow and the vast, bright skies were too much for him. His eye would ache and throb against the onslaught of light, and even at night the moon bounced off the glittering, glowing snow of the slopes. And something about the quality of the light invoked the worst headaches he'd been subjected to yet. Intentional or not, Olurugio had made himself all but impossible to track. Kifri had a feeling Agat knew what he was up to at night. She was too observant and too guarded for him to know definitively, but he found her one day with a guidance orb, holding it carefully between her hands, peering inside.
"Is this Master Aldi's deer spell?"
"Yes," was all he could say in reply. He'd been caught in his carelessness. Which is why, when Kifri discovered Agat was missing one spring day in the late afternoon, he had suspicion about her motivations, and for once, brain caps weren't the first thing to come to mind. Lately, the girls had been offered more in the way of freedom and time to themselves. They were welcome to roam around the hills before dinner, and could even go as far as Cullen if they let him know in advance. But it was a decision he didn't take lightly. Independence and personal time were important for apprentices, as was sneaking out. But it was a difficult equilibrium to perfect, what with the brain caps and their tendency to show up unexpectedly. Coco especially was always a point of worry, but he couldn't very well keep her locked up. "Bring a partner," he would remind them, knowing full well what a pain he was being, having had the same treatment inflicted on him by Beldaroid. "Back by dinner, please." But when Agat failed to show up for dinner, and Richie gave a suspicious, even rebellious shrug about her partner's whereabouts, the situation became immediately clear. He could scarcely even scold anyone, for he'd been doing precisely the same thing for months now. Kifri had been in the hasty process of donning his cloak and collecting his travel choirs when the letter from Godfrey arrived, and though it provided a sense of much-needed relief, a new worry bloomed to take its place.
Safe. Found him. Coming home now. Don't wait up.
Kifri could only hold the letter in his hands and stare, and when his hand shook too much, he set the parchment down and smoothed his palm across its surface. He hadn't felt this nervous since the disaster that was Silver Eye. For the next few hours, he did his best to feign a sense of good-natured normalcy. He attempted to eat his dinner. He swept the main rooms and shook out the blankets. He watched Tatia feed the brush body, rechecked the protection wards, and resisted the powerful urge to drink more than a glass of wine. Then, when all the evening chores were done, he tucked his feet under himself on the rug and pretended to read a book. The girls, as if sensing his tension, gave him a wide berth. With little fanfare, just before midnight, Agathe walked through the side door and unclasped her cloak.
"He's outside,"
she said, breaking into a lopsided smile. It was a surreal feeling to have old Rugi at the kitchen table again. Coco and Tatia chatted animatedly at him once they had overcome their initial shyness and pushed tea and cookies into his hands. He looked noticeably different, definitely tired, which wasn't uncommon, but more serious somehow. His hands around the cup of tea were scratched, and his hair fell into his eyes. From time to time he pushed it impatiently away and eventually tied it back, which is a handsome enough look that Kifri had to take a long, steadying drink from his cup. His beard, too, was thick and longer than he'd usually kept it, and the overall picture it painted was that of a man who hadn't thought about himself as a concept in a very long time. There was a cut across his face, too. Once, forgetting himself, Kifri reached across the table to brush his hair away and inspect it. He even managed it for a second, fingertip tracing along the newly healed section, but then they both seemed to catch themselves. Kifri pulled his hand back, and old Rugio fixed him with an even look that was difficult to read. Tatia could be called a number of wonderful words, but tactful wasn't really among them. Yet. She often announced what was on her mind, heedless of the circumstances or audience. I had never been one to pull her punches when it came to her descriptions of Olurugia. She leaned atop the kitchen table, her weight on her crossed arms.
"You look so crazy! You're just like a bear with that beard!"
Richard lifted both of her eyebrows at once, and Coco quickly stuffed a cookie into her mouth and began chewing at speed. Agathe reached out and lightly tapped her knuckles against Tatia's shoulder. And for her part, Tatia seemed to realize what she'd said and turned a bright pink.
"I do," Olruger replied easily, pouring a shot of whiskey into his empty cup. "But you don't. You look very nice. Kind of you to stay up for us."
Tatia went on damage control.
"Are you staying? Do you want a bath before bed?"
Kifri wanted nothing more than to give Olruger a peaceful night at home. The idea of him leaving again in the morning filled him with a sick feeling and a dark desperation that he didn't care to look at too closely. He capitalized on Tatia's question by pushing his chair out and standing up, bringing his own cup to the counter.
"If you pass me the cloak, I can put it into the wash barrel." "She's right. You're more than welcome to use the bath, of course."
Their eyes met briefly. Olian clasped his cloak at his neck and swept it over his shoulders before handing it over.
"Thanks,"
he said, barely audible, looking away again. The fireproof fabric lay heavy in Kifri's arms. It smelled of wood smoke and cold, and was in dire need of repairs. He set a hand on it in reverence, as if it too was an old friend, and turned to leave the kitchen. He might not be able to fix it that evening, but he could at least get the smoke out of it. From the hall, he could still hear Tatia working through her excitement and anxiety.
"How did you hurt your face? Are there griffins where you were?"
Richard's voice was quieter, ignoring Tatia's question and pushing forward with one of her own.
"Where were you?"
she said simply.
"North of mountains. working on something for some folks out there.
Why?
It is a fair question, and one Kifri was glad not to be in the room for. His eyesight might be failing, but his hearing was just as keen as ever. Because I needed to be.
You probably didn't,
she said in reply, flat and unconvinced, and Kifri could only wince. You're just going to have to trust me on this one then, Richa. Kifri was grateful when he could finally shoo the girls off to bed, and Olorubio could be given some time to catch his breath. He left him alone to bathe, and vanished into his own atelier for a time, and with no idea of when, or if, he would come out again. Kifri picked up his book and settled himself on the long window seat with the plushiest cushions. He was filled to the brim with a dull, restless sort of ache and no way to alleviate it. He tried stretching his legs. He tried focusing on what little he could see from the window, but it was much too dark, and too early in the season for fireflies. The book was essentially a useless prop at this point, impossible to focus on, and it became clear to Kifri that he had no idea what to do with himself. The feeling, however, vanished the moment Olorubio stepped into the room, holding a piece of parchment in his hand.
Huh, this was actually a really good idea,
Ollie said, holding up the half-finished spell from his work table.
Client's never going to speak to me again, but at least the idea was sound.
Kifri drew his feet up to make space at the far end of the seat, and Olorubio seemed to consider it briefly before lowering himself into the far cushion and laying the spell down on the nearest ledge. Then he crossed his arms across his chest.
We have to sort this thing out.
Kifri set his book aside. He resented this tension, this politeness and surface-level conversation between them, and as much as he was loath to dig into it, Olorubio was right.
Would you like to go first?
It seemed only fitting to offer.
Nope. I want to hear what you have to say.
Kifri could only marvel at how the man had perfected the art of the skull. In an effort to give himself a moment to think, he set his palms together and rubbed them lightly against one another.
I knew you would find out eventually, and yet I still did it. Before we go any further, I apologize with everything I am. It won't happen again.
Olruga's expression remained pointedly neutral. To keep his hands from giving him away, Kifri laced his fingers together and set them down in his lap.
I thought if I could keep things from you in a way that wouldn't grieve you, it would save us both a lot of heartache. These things that I know have been destroying me. Every day I wake up, and I still have to know them, but you don't. So, I threw them away from you, without asking. Knowing, without doubt, you'd say no, even if I had asked. At some point it seemed like a risk worth taking, but it made everything so much worse. On every level.
He swallowed and looked away.
Not knowing where you were all this time. Not knowing if you were even alive.
The room was silent for a time.
I should know better than anyone that you can't take a piece of a man and expect him not to shatter.
From the other side of the window seat, Olorubio spoke up.
If you ever use your magic against me again, it'll be the last time you see me.
Kifri nodded once, gravely. Ollie didn't know how right he was.
And if you ever use your magic to make the girls forget him...
I would never...
Kifri interjected with a note of finality.
Why would I know that? Or maybe I did know that, and I've since forgotten.
Had it frayed to that point, where Ollie thought him capable of such a thing? Was he capable of such a thing? I would never,
he reiterated, the words enunciated and firm for both Olorubio and himself. Olorubio's mouth twisted.
Do you know how badly I want to believe this?
Carefully, still meeting his eyes, Kifri leaned forward and reached for his hand. It was given, however hesitantly, and Kifri gave his fingertips a light squeeze. There had always been calluses on all his hands,
but usually they were from holding a pen too tightly and for too long. There were new ones now, across the tops of his palms and on the undersides of his fingers.
"You missed you. I've missed you. I want you to stay more than anything."
"Well, that's generous. But I know what you want more than anything. And it's not me. It's Brinca blood."
Kifri felt his heart seizing grief. It was because he was right. Ollie was on a pedestal about nearly everything in his life, including his own little atelier. But at the top, just barely edging the man out, was a sense of justice for his past self, answers, and admittedly, revenge.
"I've always been second for you, priority-wise,"
Oldrugion continued.
"I've known that since I met you, and I don't mind, as long as you don't mind being first for me. And if you do, you should probably say something now. And I mean right now."
"It feels so unfair for you," Kifri muttered, but he didn't deny it. He couldn't.
"I've had a lot of time to acclimate."
Aldrugio looked as though he wanted to add something else, but shook his head and carried on.
"Anyway, can you imagine if you put me first? It would be a nightmare. The girls would die of embarrassment. They'd kick us out of the Great Hall for good."
Ollie exhaled through his nose and glanced to the side.
"I suppose it's too late to travel very far, so I guess I'll stay over."
Kifri nodded, but a small smile appeared. "A nightmare, you think so?" Aldrugio gave a short huff of exasperation and took his hand back to stretch his arms over his head.
"I hate that I knew all this would happen, and I still came inside. You're not especially convincing, you know."
He strapped his ear against his shoulder, grumbling.
"I'm just to soften your nonsense, is all."
Kifri wasn't done, though. "Only, I need you to know. Once I get my answers, you'll be first. Where you should be." Rather than answer directly, Aldrugio gestured impatiently.
"Make space."
And without waiting for a reply, he climbed forward to wedge himself between Kifri and the wall, draping himself casually over the pillows. The close proximity of him and the late hour had Kifri flushed with warmth. He didn't quite know where to put his arm, and there was nothing he could say that wouldn't reopen the wound they'd just begun to bandage. So Kifri turned onto his side and slotted himself comfortably against Aldrugio. When his friend didn't put up any objection, Kifri slipped an arm around his waist, which was still warm from the bath.
"I don't think I'd do very well without you around,"
Aldrugio admitted quietly and seemed to relax against him, adjusting to the hand press against his stomach.
"I always end up giving in to the worst impulses, you know."
Which rewards Kifri could have said about himself. Without Olurugo's stabilizing presence, he'd always slip much more easily towards the darker corners and the poor decisions. They stayed as they were for a time, half dozing in the pillows. Kifri reluctant to move from his spot curled against him. Eventually, Aldrugio shifted his weight onto his side so they could face one another, and his brow was knit into a line of intense concentration. He lifted a hand, and his fingers brushed across the leather straps woven against Kifri's neck. Gently, with more care than strictly needed, Ollie began to work the top strap free, and Kifri raised his chin, bearing the skin there as an offering. Ollie leaned forward, starting on the second, and he could feel the warmth of his thumb as it raced down the now exposed skin. His gaze flicked upward, inviting Aldrugio to keep going with an expectant, sleepy look.
"Oh my gosh!"
The feeling in the room very suddenly shifted.
"Hey!"
Aldrugio pulled away in an instant, and Kifri, too slow to understand, too deeply submerged in the feeling, could only blink through his confusion. Aldrugio snatched a nearby pillow and lobbed it wide across the room, intentionally missing Coco and Agat, who were peering around the corner of the wall.
"Get to bed."
"Are you friends again?"
"Clear out already."
The girls were gone in a flurry of delighted, quiet laughter and quick footfalls. He heard the door to their shared study click soundly shut. Ollie looked flushed,
scrubbing a hand across the back of his neck before straightening the remaining pillows he'd overturned. He muttered as he worked, the words too low for even Kifri. Kifri was still under the spell of the moment before. He swallowed, and his neck felt pleasantly vulnerable.
What have you been teaching them while I was out?
Olurugio was half-joking to keep his embarrassment at bay, his refreshed northern accent coming through full force, but Kifri's thoughts were already moving past the girls. With a sense of new urgency and a determined look that would give Agat a run for her money, he took Ollie's hand, slipping his fingers into the rightful place. In one smooth movement, he rose from the window seat, and Olurugio was dragged along for the first few steps before he clued in and followed willingly. Neither of them said anything as they took the stairs up to Kifri's small room, and Olurugio gave one last glance backwards, making sure there were no further witnesses before they darted inside and shut the door behind them. Kifri had meant to take the lead once they were alone, but it was Ollie who pressed him against the back of the door and sunk against him, kneading his waist impatiently. The kiss came a moment later, forceful enough that Kifri could tell he was still a little angry, but deep and sweet enough that he could sense his friend just beneath it all. He couldn't help the sound he made in reply, arching against him, the beard scratching in a way that felt surprisingly good. Kifri leaned into the kiss, eyes closed, winding both fists in the loose fabric at the back of his white shirt.
Wait.
With something of a wild look in his eyes, Ollie pulled away, and Kifri made a note of immediate protest. Ollie looked around the room, and only seemed to find what he was looking for when his gaze lit upon a pen and a spare pad of choir parchment on the far bedside table. He stepped away and dropped to the bed, where he stretched out to reach for the pen, collecting the object in a clumsy way that made Kifri certain he'd spill the ink at any moment. Sprawled on his stomach against the bed, Olurugio dashed off the markings of a spell, then made a conflicted kind of face. He turned the choir around.
Which way does the sun go, inside or out?
Kifri leaned over to look. It was a proximity silencing spell, and the thought nearly took him out of the knees. Flip it. Right now you have it so we can hear out of the room. Olurugio tore the unsuccessful page from the choir pad and tossed the paper haphazardly to the floor. He redid the spell with a sign in the opposite direction and closed it with the word's quickest ring. In all honesty, there was nothing funnier than the man trying to cork a bottle of ink while awkwardly laid out across the bed. Kifri sat himself down next to him and draped an arm across his back, dipping down to kiss his shoulder, even as Olurugio struggled to set the items back in the rightful place. Once they were put away, Olurugio turned onto his back and brushed his hair from his face, his eyes bright and eager.
While we're out here, some things will regret. This shirt of yours make me want to put my head in a vapor bubble. I could have stayed out there another year in the snow, and it wouldn't be enough to cool me down.
Olurugio did his best to wrap an ankle around him, but the fabric of the robes got in the way, and Kifri could only laugh, the first real one in a long time. This one. Kifri slipped two fingers through the remaining strips of leather and pulled them carefully apart, unbraiding the bottom two with a practice hand. Then he fixed Ollie with a sly, knowing look, leaning forward to brace a hand on either side of him, and Olurugio's hands found an easy home on his waist. Kifri took his glasses from his nose and placed them to the side, then leaned down to kiss him. Kifri owned into the crook of his arm as he entered the kitchen the following morning, his body strenuously objecting to the lack of sleep. He set about making a pot of coffee, completing the ritual in a thoughtful silence, and it was until he sat himself down at the kitchen table with his mug that he noticed Agat on the far side, watching him over a bowl of porridge. "Good morning," he said, sitting up. "Am I in trouble?" "Oh, certainly," he said, as he tipped a splash of cream into his cup. "Richard, too, for aiding and abetting." "We shouldn't be. You sort of started this." He remembered this face from his own apprenticeship, where both he and Olurugia had begun to test the boundaries of their relationship with their masters, where they'd pushed back and shaken off instruction, nettled by the confines of the uneven power dynamic. It was a natural part of the process, after all. The difference was that Belderuit probably had him in scrubbing people's memories. Kifri sipped his coffee, mulling her words over. "What do you think the response should be?" he said eventually. Agat pushed her porridge around with a spoon, then forcefully submerged a berry. "I think you probably shouldn't erase people's memories when they don't want it. I won't tell Lucy about it, if you don't tell her I went looking for him." Immediately lips to blackmail. She's otherwise not wrong, though. He reached across the table and took a spare strawberry from her plate and said nothing in reply. "Is he going to stay?" Agat's voice was hopeful, lifting at the end. "Mm-hmm," he agreed, biting into the berry. After he swallowed, he elaborated, but not as a watchful eye. Agat squinted, biting back a smile. "Because he's not impartial." "No, he's not." The brush buddy took that moment to saunter into the room on a quest for attention, and Kifri was grateful for the interruption. As much as he loved her, the last thing he needed in his life was an inquest about his relationships from his precocious teenage apprentice. He leaned down and scooped the creature up, draping the furry shape over his shoulder. It seemed content to stay, coiling loosely around his neck, so he stood and moved to the counter again, pouring a second cup of coffee, this one black. Agat watched, taking another bite, her knee bouncing under the table. "Agat," he said, pausing at the doorway with a mug in each hand. "Thank you for finding him. It means everything to me." He gave her a small, sincere smile, warm, appreciative, and long overdue. "You've never stopped impressing me." And she smiled back in reply, one of genuine happiness. The end. recorded for Summer Potfix Web 2025 as a gift for Ilurhir. Ilurhir, I hope you enjoyed this potfic. I was actually really excited when I saw that I got paired with you. This series had been taking over my life for quite a while now, and I'm just so happy to know that another potficker is stuck right here with me. That being said, while I've recorded a couple of shorter Tonga Deboshi no Atori potfics, this was the first slightly longer one, and more importantly, the first one that included more people than just Kifri and Olrugio and like a stray mention of Coco, which means that I went into this having figured out like maybe two names and half a character voice. So there was a lot of making it up as I go, and as for how any of these names are meant to be pronounced, I ended up just falling back on the katakana used in the manga, because I have never heard any of these names said out loud, and I was not about to try and figure out how they're supposed to be said in English. It is what it is. But yeah, Lily Pilly Beetle, thank you once again so much for giving me permission to pod this wonderful, wonderful story. For all that you said that the fic is a year old and written with the knowledge we had at the time, honestly, I think all of it still holds up extremely well, even with all the revelations we've had since then. And it's just such a wonderful, optimistic, self-contained story. I'm so happy I got to narrate it. So yeah, thank you again. Everybody, go give the original story all of your love. It really deserves it. Hope you enjoyed this potfic. And as always, don't forget to stretch, drink water, and I'll see you in the next one. Bye.